I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. As the Maryland General Assembly enters its fourth week, a conversation about the priorities of the Maryland Legislative Black Caucus for the 2019 session. What bills will they be pushing in areas like criminal justice, education, and health care? Will a proposal to raise the age for the purchase of tobacco to 21 gain any traction? Will lawmakers ban 3D guns? Will the laws governing who controls the Baltimore Police Department change? And is this the year that Maryland will see a statewide $15 minimum wage? Delegate Pamela Queen of Montgomery County and Delegate Cherie Sample Hughes of Wicomico County join me. Plus, a check-in with Wanda Draper as she prepares to retire as the executive director of the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of Maryland African American History and Culture. That's ahead when Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. The Maryland General Assembly convened for their 439th session on January 9th. Lawmakers are on track to match last year's workload, in which the legislature considered more than 3,000 bills. Last Friday, Republican leaders in the House of Delegates released their legislative agenda. Interestingly, Maryland Matters reports that this is the first time Republicans have released an agenda since Larry Hogan was elected governor. Their priorities for the 2019 session include the Murder and Repeat Violent Offender Registry Act and what they're calling a common sense tax cut that would lower the state's income tax rate by a quarter of a percent. They're also advocating for single-member districts. The women legislators of Maryland have vowed to continue their work in preventing workplace harassment and focusing on the needs of female veterans and seniors. And Maryland's Legislative Asian American and Pacific Islander Caucus has identified bail reform and health care among their chief concerns. Now, a conversation about the 2019 agenda of Maryland's Legislative Black Caucus. The 56-member organization will celebrate its 50th anniversary next year. As Brian Sears of the Daily Record reports, the Black Caucus holds 45 of the 99 Democratic seats in the House and another 11 in the Senate. To discuss the issues the LBC believes are top of mind with Black Marylanders, Democratic Delegate Pamela Queen. Delegate Queen represents Montgomery County. She is the secretary of the Legislative Black Caucus of Maryland, and she joins us on the line from her home in Montgomery County. Delegate, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great, thanks. And Delegate Cherie Sample Hughes represents Wicomico County and parts of Dorchester County. She's also the chair of the Women's Legislators of Maryland. She's on the line from Annapolis. Delegate, welcome to you as well.
Well, thank you so much. I'm excited to be here and be able to have a discussion as the priorities.
Well, we are delighted to have you as well. So, listeners, what do you think the priorities of the Black Caucus should be for, and for that matter, what do you think the priorities of the entire legislature should be? You can join our conversation at 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org. You can also drop us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR. So, Delegate Queen, let me start with you and the so-called Fight for 15. This is one of the things that's on the list of priorities for the Black Caucus. And there's a lot of talk that this year, as opposed to the other years where it's failed, this year it has a better chance of prevailing. What do you think?
Well, we feel very optimistic about the Fight for 15. It's going to come through the Economic Development Committee. That is chaired by Delegate Derek Davis, who is also a member of the Black Caucus. And so we really feel that this is time for us to look at making sure that in the workforce people are paid a wage that is livable and sustainable here in the Maryland area. We think that it's going to get a lot of support. We have been trying to reach out to many of the business areas, especially our small businesses, to make sure that we understand the issues that they've raised and trying to make sure we address many of those issues. So we actually had a presentation from the Black Caucus from McDonald's representing some of the fast food retail industry. And, again, they had some concerns about the bill, but We understand that this is something we need to move towards, and I think we're going to get good traction on it this year.
And Delegate Sample Hughes, there's a gentleman who represents restaurant and bar owners. This legislation, of course, like all of these minimum wage pieces of legislation, it gradually increases the minimum wage over a period of time. But by the year 2026, restaurants and bars would pay at least $15 an hour in addition to any tips that their employees might receive. That's a much different situation than currently exists. How do you respond to folks who have these restaurants and bars that say that is going to be economically unfeasible for them?
Well, how I respond is that we still are needing to have the conversations and understand holistically what their concerns are. So prior to me coming into session, I held a meeting within my district and heard directly from small minority businesses that were in attendance, and they did express concern, and I equally have concern as well. So the Economic Matters Committee that will have this bill in front of them will be able to vet it, be able also hear from persons who have concerns, and hopefully can come to a fair and equitable process across the board, because I mean, it is known that people need livable wages, okay? But I also look at the issue from another perspective, because I serve on the Health and Government Operations Committee, and I'm concerned about the Medicaid rates, if you will, as it relates to the reimbursement rates, how and if we are able to go to the $15 a wage, how do we make sure that quality health care is still being provided, and the businesses such as the nursing homes, the home care nurses are still able to provide quality but also maintain staffing. So I liken that to be the same as in the restaurant industry. I understand that there are certainly concerns with that, and we need to be able to look at those holistically along with the Appropriations Committee. There has been information that's been somewhat provided that it may be done or implemented on a regional basis. To that end, I know it's certainly a lot of work that's going to have to go into this, but I certainly have the faith in our Economic Matters Committee, but I also want to continue to hear from my constituency.
And Delegate Queen, let's talk about HBCUs. I understand that the Black Caucus sent a letter just Friday to the governor requesting a meeting pretty much right away. And there is a meeting scheduled with the caucus, I guess, on the 7th of February, so a week or so from now. But what do you want to accomplish in that meeting whenever it takes place? And this is certainly an issue that's dragged on for quite a while. The original lawsuit was filed some 12 years ago. What do you think what are you hoping to do on that piece of legislation this week or this year?
Well, we're really hoping that we can finally bring some sort of resolution to this case. As you mentioned, it has been going on for some years. What we want out of this is basically some sort of fair equity to kind of restore some of the grievances that have been issues with the HBCUs in Maryland in terms of the duplication of curricula and programs. And so we know that this will take some time to, I guess, get us to a point where these HBCUs can have programs that will be thriving within the state. And so what we're hoping is that as part of the mediation that's going on, that we will look at how this has been an impact to our state, has been going on for a long time, and looking at some of the other cases that have been addressed throughout the country with HBCUs, whether that's in North Carolina or Alabama or Tennessee, in terms of what has been some of the settlements. So we're really looking for both sides to come to the table to resolve this and to make sure that we can try to move on a path where the HBCUs can be made whole. We know that that will take some amount of money, and we're hoping that the state will make this a very generous result.
Yeah.
Proposition.
And Delegate Sample Hughes, the delegate mentioned other states. I know, for example, Mississippi settled a similar suit for more than $500 million. The governor last year offered $100 million. So obviously there's a big divide there, a big chasm between those numbers. I mean, do you have any indication that this year anything is different in terms of the governor's thinking and in terms of support for a more substantial settlement of this lawsuit?
Well, certainly I cannot get into the head of the governor as much as I would love to. But what I will say is this, is that I believe that we as a body can come to an understanding that, number one, the HBCUs need equitable funding. They need an equal playing field, whereas some of our colleges in the state of Maryland are receiving substantial amount of money. And so, therefore, they're able to leverage additional dollars from private sector and from other areas as well. And alumni that graduate, say, from College Park University, they're able to then give back to their colleges. So that, unfortunately, is not always the case at our HBCUs. So we did, as a Black Caucus, look at the case down in Mississippi and understand and really would like to see Maryland move in that direction of $500 million or more, given the fact that we want to ensure that programming at the colleges are, programs that need to be of today's time, and making sure that we are at the table when it comes to STEM education and be able to invest in those historically Black colleges and universities. So to that end, we're going to continue to have the conversation with the governor. We also know that there is a timeline that's put in place by the courts. And it's my understanding they're in negotiations right now through the mediation process. And so, but I think what's more important is that we are going to continue to have a voice in the process and make sure the governor is aware that it is a priority. So collectively, I believe that we can come to a decision to move the historically Black colleges and universities forward economically and also through policy.
You're listening to Midday here on 88.1 WYPR. I'm Tom Hall. My guest today, Delegate Pamela Queen, who represents Montgomery County in the Maryland House, and Delegate Cherie Sample Hughes, who represents Wicomico County and parts of Dorchester County. We're talking about the legislative priorities of the Black Caucus here in Maryland. Our phone number on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can also drop us a tweet at Midday WYPR. Delegate Queen, one more question about the HBCU lawsuit. This is going to happen in the context of two things. Number one, there's a court order that seeks to have this matter resolved by the 30th of April. That'll be, you know, just as the session is finished. And the other thing is that, of course, the recommendations from the Kerwin Commission are expected to start to be addressed. And there's a price tag of that some have estimated at some $3.8 billion. So given how much money is going to be possibly required from the Kerwin Commission, and given the temporal deadline that you have, how do those two factors play into how you see the lawsuit with the HBCUs playing out in the next couple of months?
Well, I mean, that certainly is going to be a dilemma for the state in terms of where we prioritize money and how we, allocate funding for both of these important initiatives this session. What I would suspect or hope that would happen is that we would have a plan in terms of money being provided over a certain amount of years for both the HBCUs as well as with Kerwin. I don't expect that we will be able to do all the things within the Kerwin Commission that is needed, and we would hope to have done, but we could phase in some of the, you know, more important pieces or what we identify as some of our priorities, whether that's dealing with universal pre-K or whether that's with funding for teachers to make sure we have a more professional teaching staff, whatever those sort of priorities are that the Kerwin Commission outlines, I expect it will do things sort of in a phased approach. But I would want us to make sure we do something with both pieces. Likewise, with the HBCU lawsuit, I wouldn't expect that all the funding would be made available in 1 year, but certainly over the course of a number of years, we would get that done.
And Delegate Sample Hughes, there's also a proposal to raise the age where one is allowed to purchase tobacco to 21. It's currently at 18. In order to order a drink in the state of Maryland, you have to be 21 years old to be drafted or to register with Selective Service that sort of thing. You can do that at age 18. Why 21 and why now for that piece of legislation?
Well, certainly it's a very, very important subject. Given the fact that African Americans suffer the greatest burden of tobacco-related mortality of any ethnic or racial group in the United States. And so I think that for us as a Black caucus, that's why it rises to the occasion that we need to bring awareness to it. Too often than not, you find that a lot of tobacco retailers are in the neighborhoods of African Americans and in lower poverty areas. So it's definitely necessary, but the goal is ultimately is to ensure that our youth are not being engaged early on to be addicted, if you will, to tobacco use. We're looking at this to be a goal to, you know, reduce the amount of persons who are teenagers in particular of having access to tobacco use and saving our youth, saving the number of persons that would die from tobacco use. And so it is very important, and I look for us to possibly move the needle forward and to be able to pass the legislation. We have received research and data from the National Academy of Medicine. Their reports have been available to us. We're still, as a Black caucus, able to share our concerns with the American Cancer Society. So the goal is there, and I think that it's reachable, it's attainable. Again, this piece of legislation is going through Economic Matters, although it's not my committee, but I have been looking at it from my perspective of the health perspective and making sure that we can do something to curtail the number of persons who are engaged in tobacco use.
Yeah, it's interesting that it's in the Economic Matters Committee. I mean, tobacco kills 480,000 Americans every year. That's if you combined all the car crashes, the opioid deaths, and gun violence combined, it would still be more deaths from tobacco. Delegate Queen, this would cause a drop in tax revenue because cigarettes and tobacco are highly taxed. The comptroller has estimated that it could be anywhere from $10 to $15 million in lost revenue. But does this become a moral issue? Is this the kind of thing where they say, well, maybe it costs us $15 million, but if we save lives because so many people do start smoking before the age of 21, it's worth that investment?
It certainly is worth that investment. I think you can't put that sort of price comparison on life and certainly the quality of life for any individual. So again, when you shorten the lifespan of a person or change their quality of life in terms of being sick or being away from work, that also is an impact to us from a revenue standpoint. So I don't think you can compare that sort of from a, you know, apple-to-apple type of comparison, but I think this is an important piece of legislation. As you highlighted, tobacco kills, and we need to look at those issues, and we know the effects of tobacco, and I think it does make sense that we sought to raise the age here in Maryland.
And Delegate Sample Hughes, there's a report in the Daily Record from Brian Sears that there was a meeting, a closed-door meeting that happened on Friday to discuss the future of Nancy Kopp as the state treasurer. She is elected not by voters but by the legislature. She served in that position now for a while. Can you comment on what the conversation was about at that meeting on Friday?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I don't know what meeting you're referring to on Friday. I was in a committee meeting with appropriations, as I was asked by my chairwoman. So I'm not knowledgeable of.
This could have been a week. I'm sorry. This could have been a week ago Friday. But forgive me. I think this was not this past Friday, but a week before that. The report in the Daily Record came out on the 14th of the month.
Okay.
I mean, are there questions about Nancy Kopp, and does the caucus have concerns about Nancy Kopp and her performance as the treasurer, which of course is one of the positions on the Board of Public Works?
Oh yes, this is certainly a vital position. So what I will say is this: is being a minority woman, I certainly like to see representation to be reflective of the representation of the state. So therefore, personally, I can't speak certainly for the caucus, because if it was a closed-door meeting, then that is naturally the bylaws are obviously followed, and it has to remain, the information has to remain there in the the meeting itself. But, you know, any person who serves an elected position or appointed position, we certainly want results. We want persons to be accountable to the mission that they're there for. So personally, it makes it important, regardless of the treasurer position or anybody's position for that matter, that it's necessary to, you know, vote for the population that you're trying to serve and ensure that there is fairness and is equitable decisions are being made across the board. So given the fact that that is a concern, and I think you've heard maybe from other caucus members, I think it behooves us as a caucus to ensure that we have representation and that we have at least our best interests at heart by those who serve in those capacities. Nancy Cobb has reached out to me from the perspective of being the member of the or the president of the Women's Caucus, and you know, collectively we can continue to work together by all means. So regardless if she is appointed to serve again in that capacity or whomever for that matter, I just want to ensure that we are having our voice to be heard on a regular basis, not just when it's time for election process to go through.
And Delegate Queen, in terms of criminal justice, what are the priorities of the Legislative Black Caucus this session when it comes to that very important area?
Sure. We have a few things in the area of criminal justice that we are looking at. The ending of the unit rule, which has been very has a major impact to the African-American community.
Explain to folks what the unit rule is, please.
Sure. I'll try. So what tends to happen with a lot of cases that we find in the African-American community, a person gets charged with a battery of issues. So it's not like they get charged for just one thing or the other. They have this whole slate of charges. And so what happens is if some of the charges are worth being expunged and the other is not, then you can't get, you know, any of them expunged. And so what we want to do, and that's that unit rule, they're all taken as one unit, all these different charges. And so what we want to try to do, or what this bill proposes, is that we do get, you expunge the things that can be expunged, and then those that cannot will remain the same, that we decouple those sort of issues such that a person doesn't have this laundry list of issues and can't get any of the items expunged. And so that's one of the things that we're looking at. And I think there was a bill. The bill was heard, I think, last week or so by the committee that will look at that, at the JPR and Judicial Committee. So that's one of the issues that we're looking at. We're also looking at possible better reentry bills. So once people, we call this a successful reentry bill, in terms of people who are released, that they have this ability to go through some transition to get back into the workforce, get back into the neighborhood, and not just be released and not have the wraparound services that are needed to be successful and to reduce the recidivism. So those are other sorts of issues that are very important to us in the criminal justice list. Mm-hmm. We also have the banning of 3D guns, made by 3D printer guns. That's another issue with us trying to look at reducing guns on our streets in throughout Maryland. That's another issue that's being, at least a bill that's being proposed that's pre-filed that we should be looking at under the criminal justice system. So, again, our effort has been to try to make headway in some of our justice reform initiatives, making sure that we are doing things to reduce recidivism, and trying to operate out of a value system that people deserve a second chance, and trying to make sure that the state is supportive of that in ways of resources and services.
And Delegate Sapley-Hughes, let me give you the last word because we're running out of time here. This shows my ignorance of the Maryland Charter, but one of the things that's on the list for the Legislative Black Caucus is to eliminate slavery in the Charter. Can you explain how slavery is still part of the Maryland Charter?
Well, I think we're all in education mode on that. Certainly, we do not want to have that word or the tone of slavery to be continued in the state of Maryland. I think that we have certainly made strides to educate people, to provide a culture where it is a positive environment, but there's certainly more work to do. But I think by removing that word can certainly bring about a more positive tone in where we are in 2019.
Delegate Cherie Sample-Hughes represents Wicomico County and parts of Dorchester County. Delegate Pamela Queen represents Montgomery County. They are members of the Legislative Black Caucus of Maryland. Delegates, thank you both for your time, and good luck for the rest of the session. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Quick break, and when Midday returns, Wanda Draper, the executive director of the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of Maryland African American History and Culture, joins me to discuss how she's helped the once beleaguered institution find its footing and the reasons behind her decision to retire next month. But before we take a quick break, on Mondays here on Midday, it's our practice to read the names of the people who've lost their lives to violence in the previous week. We stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far in this first month of 2019, 25 people in Baltimore have lost their lives to violence. Two previously unidentified victims of homicide from the week before last have now been named by police. They are Gregory Sinclair, age 31, and Corey Dodd, age 25. Last week, Baltimore police reported 8 homicide victims in our city. So far, they have identified 6 of those people. They are Devontae Robinson, age 26, Melvin Harper, age 51, Harold Blandon Jr., age 41, Alvin Stewart, age 67, Ronald Good, age 55, and James Rucker. He was 51 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.